My name is Marilyn S. Beach. Really. And I am an alcoholic. And I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous and Emotions Anonymous and Overeaters Anonymous. They just laughed at me, sure enough. But I'm a member of any organization that has as a basis the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that saves my life and my sanity, and hopefully will help me to share with you what little bit I have to share. It's really not a little bit. In fact, I think probably when I submitted it to As the World Turns, they it was returned as unbelievable. I'm telling you the truth. This is the greatest round robin that I have ever seen. And if you agree with me, let's say so. It took some fine people, some I know personally, that are very fine, and some great organizations. Never seen anything like it. Folks just doing what they're supposed to do and go when they're supposed to go. And in my good old Indian time, I'm trailing behind. But I have never seen anything to equal it, especially for a first one. And I do congratulate you. I am so privileged to be here. I belong here. But behind this podium is different. And I'm not really any different from any of you. Never have been, and probably never will be quite where you are. Because I found that it's really true. Repetition strengthens and confirms. And I thought that was the most dumb shit thing I had ever heard of in my life. It bored me to tears. Repetition strengthens and confirms. Keep coming back every night, every night. Read the book. Go to the meeting. I didn't even ever want to hear it anymore. But I have a real swinging dry date. And it's taken many years for a lot of those things to have any real meaning to me. Today, I can honestly thank this God that understands me, that repetition does strengthen and confirm. Just about the time I think I've had it all, I know it all, I've learned it all, there's nothing left to experience. Better look out. There'll be something new in my life to experience and to work through. And it goes on and on and on, and I haven't grown an inch. I still have the lowest bottom in this room. That's why I'm standing on this box. And I wasn't going to tell that. I was not going to tell you the infamy of me in my box. But they made such a to-do about getting it up here tonight. You know, I just very quietly said, do you have something for me to stand on? And I usually ask that, and somebody scuffles around and gets a Coke case or some of, I really can't see over the podium. And that may be better. I'll try that sometime. But I like eye contact, and I like to look at your eyeballs. And I usually have to stand on something. Someone made a terrible mistake one time, in my opinion, and invited me over to the hole in the ground over in Amarillo, Texas, where they have that spiritual retreat every year. And I'm not really known to be a spiritual speaker. In fact, I just begged that I not talk on Sunday morning because folks kind of expect that. And, you know, I got my own thing going for me, but somehow I don't know how to share that quite as well as this raunchiness I've been through. A lot more folks relate to me, I'll tell you. They asked me over to Amarillo. And you know, it really is a wonderful place to go and some place I would really like to go today and be a part of. But then I wasn't too old in the program. I couldn't figure out what in the hell they wanted with me over there when it was going to be so spiritual. So I psyched myself up good, you know, for about a week. Think spiritual, Marilyn, think spiritual. I read everything spiritual the big book had to say and on and on and on and on. And, of course, I had to have this box to stand on. And they found one for me. And when I was introduced, I walked up to the podium and there was no box there. And I looked around and I was really frustrated because it was a tall podium. And someone saw my frustration and made a mad dash over to the side to get my Coke carton and brought it over to me. And wouldn't you know, I was coming up like this. First thing came out of my mouth was, well, I've been here 15 minutes and somebody's done stole my box. By that time I figured I might as well just be myself. And that's the greatest privilege that I have today. I don't have to play roles and I don't have to be a comedian, even though I enjoy that sometimes. I don't have to in order to survive. I was delighted to go over and meet Elmer, and I'm glad that this civil rights person was here to be a part of this particular talk, because all of you that have ever heard me know that I usually mention that I'm the only blue-eyed child born into a tribe of brown-eyed Chickasaw Indians. And there was a lot of doubt about me right from the start. It ain't no wonder I was different. But that's the way it was. And through the years, I have come to appreciate my father having a head right on the Indian roll in Oklahoma, and my grandparents and their parents. And I told my grandfather, he's the one that was got married, and he married the Indian squaw, and they weren't too well thought of in those days. The white men that came into Indian territory and picked up squaw and married her, because it gave them all the same rights that their squaw had, whatever the hell they were, you know, walk 5 paces behind the horse and that stuff. But my grandfather really loved my grandmother, and they loved each other, and their love was sincere, and they lived very happy lives. They were married when they were 21 through an Indian ceremony, as well as civil, and they were each allotted 360 acres of land. And at the age of 22, they sold every acre, mineral rights and all, because they had become Christians in that Nazarene church. And they gave every dime of it to the church. We have a college in Oklahoma City, the Bethany Nazarene College, that was built on my goddamn Indian money. I have to heart and spit every time I drive by there today. But you know, they were perfectly happy with what they'd done. They loved it. And they lived the rest of their lives just like so, you know, above poverty. They dedicated their lives to working with other Indians and to help them find a better way of life. And they were just happy as hog sunshine with it. Never imposed themselves on me or my beliefs. Loved me very much just the way I was. And I'll never forget that. I'll never forget that my grandfather asked me when I was very young if I thought I'd be willing to help. I said, sure, because I had a lot of talent and skills and abilities, just like the big book said. I could sing and dance and do all kinds of funny things and entertain. And I went with them many times to those meetings. I'm very familiar with those that Nell mentioned this morning. And I went along, but I soon became very bored with that. I'll never forget his asking me, though, could I make a lifetime work of that? Would I please be interested enough to try to carry on some of our traditions? And traditions I knew nothing about. Character I knew nothing about. Well, I'd been exposed to it. You know, I was a Girl Scout for 9 years, and I knew how to be prepared. And always was. Born and raised, you know, on the front pew of that church. I was exposed to every character building program that one can be exposed to. But I knew nothing about character and principles. But I do remember that he asked. We are very proud Indians, and we have a lot to pass on. Would you be a part of that? Would you see that our traditions don't die? Would you see that our spiritual beliefs don't die? And I said, sure, anytime. I didn't recall that until the last 5 years. I really hadn't thought about it much. I just remembered that Nazarene church and that college. So I'm glad Elmer's here, and I'm glad this civil rights person is over here, see? Because you have a perfectly, beautifully racial balance right here, up here at the front, me and Elmer and all y'all. I wondered about all these speakers coming from Oklahoma, and then I saw after I got here that old Charlie was going to talk, and Charlie wasn't from Oklahoma, so I figured they knew what they were doing. I didn't have to go help them run that show by telling them Charlie wasn't an Okie. And you cannot live in Oklahoma and not be some Indian. It's nearly impossible to be a native anyway and not be some Indian. And old Buttermilk, that good old country boy, is he here? As I want, if not, I want to be sure and tell him that I've been screwed by good old country boys more than any other kind. You know, there's real good old country boys, and then there are those who use that. It's a good old country boy, hon. You get paid today. Buttermilk's obviously not here tonight. I love Buttermilk for being just what he is. But he was from Pawnee, Oklahoma. I understand we got more Indians in the state of Oklahoma than the rest of the United States put together. And there's a batch of them down there. But there's only 5 civilized tribes, according to history. And I noticed, you all know that Nell and Cleve are from Warika. We got funny names. I imagine y'all do up here. But I'm from Shawnee, and y'all got a Shawnee up here. But from the state of Oklahoma, which means red man. And everybody seems to kind of have it all together. You know, even Charlie talked about his Cherokee bride. And I thought, well, that makes it unanimous. You know, we're all from one of those funny-sounding places. But I don't have it all together. You see, I'm from Oklahoma, and Shawnee is a tribe. I live in Pottawatomie County, and that's a tribe. And I'm a Chickasaw, and nobody ever heard of us, you know. We had all time, one time we were all Choctaws back there in Mississippi. And you might know that when they started to haul us off down here in Indian Territory, there was a little group of about 1,000 that didn't want to go, by God. They didn't want to go, and they were known to be famous warriors. And they broke off from the Choctaw Nation and called themselves the Chickasaws. And the word Chickasaw means rebel. I'm justifying everything y'all are about to hear. I am one of those. I have all the rights in the world to be a rebel. I wanted my children to carry on the traditions because those things once lost are gone forever. And I had become very interested in our culture. And way back there, when I first started to try to work the 11th step of this program, I started seeking all of the religions to try to find the principles that would jive with those of ours here in AA. And sure enough, there was some little something wrong with every one of them. I couldn't take the whole thing 100%. So I stuck with the principles of AA, and I found that the basic spiritual principles of my own Indian tribe are identical. And these I am enjoying exposing my children to, and my grandchildren. Some of them are hooking on to it and some of them aren't. I had one special one that did. I never intended to be an alcoholic, did y'all? I never did say, man, I want to be an alcoholic when I grow up. I didn't know I was one for a long time. And as Charlie says, aren't we always the last to know? And then he said, no, we know. We're just the last to admit. I have two sisters. I believe Nell mentioned in her talk today that I so thoroughly enjoyed. The Almiron saved my sanity one time, and I will be forever grateful to the Almiron. I am so grateful for every person that was willing and is willing today to be an Alapine sponsor. Maybe later you'll know how grateful I am for Alapine. But I believe she mentioned today that our alcoholism is a family disease, and you better believe mine was. You know Indians can't drink. My grandmother went to her grave believing that it was our Indian blood that caused us this crazy. For a fact. And that we could, you know, we couldn't handle that. Well, nobody in my family could handle it, I'll put it that way. My entire family, with the exception of my mother, were alcoholics. And didn't know how to do anything in moderation. and I still don't. But none of us knew. I have two brothers that died of alcoholism, or as the direct result of alcohol. And there are three of us gals who are now members of Alcoholics Anonymous. My father was an alcoholic, and I can remember, should I do that because I don't want to sound old. I can remember when beer joints and bootleggers and some restaurants and various places had big signs over the door that said, no Indians allowed. You remember that, Ella? I see, we got them all fixed up. Now, what the hell y'all gonna do with us? Well, I did find out, you know, I have a wonderful husband I want to tell y'all about, but not a lot. He's a brilliant geologist, and I decided at one time if I married him, I'd get my everything back drop by drop, barrel by barrel, tankful by tankful. There was something else about him that appealed to me, too. In addition to that, he's also a commissioner for the Oklahoma State Wildlife Commission. Man, if he can handle those wild animals out there, he can sure handle me. And he lovingly does. I know that he loves me very much, but I've never quite believed that he was ever at any time in love with me. I think probably he is and still was and still is in all. Half the time he doesn't know what I'm saying. So we don't have a lot of problems with our relationship, and I hear a lot about that in AA, and it says as plain as day, the thing we fail to recognize about ourselves is our basic inability to form a healthy relationship with another human being. And I said, who the hell has to have relationships? You know, so obviously they don't have any. But in this program, there is a solution as to how to go about doing that. I never had a healthy relationship with anyone, simply because I was always number one. I don't know about the disease of alcoholism being hereditary. The scientists and research people now seem to kind of believe that there's something wrong with our genes, and I wear designer ones. Take their name off and put mine on. Some things I just can't give up. It's ego. I just thought this morning, God, I wish I could be humble. Oh my! I've always wanted to be one of those people like Neil, who is so precious, and quietly go around doing good. I don't quietly go around doing anything. But I ain't got none of that, seems like. It's not in me, somehow. About time to think of, you know, that was nice of me. Somebody said it wasn't either. I drank because I wanted to. And it's just that simple. It didn't make any difference what kind of tag I put on it, what kind of justification or rationalization I drank because I wanted to. I could not bear life on a day-to-day basis. I could not bear the reality of disappointment. I could not bear the situation and the trap I felt I had myself in because I didn't go to Hollywood like I was supposed to. And then, if I'd had a drink, I'd think, well, what the hell? I'd have to go to OU for 4 years to get a degree in drama. 4 years! And then I'd have to go out to Hollywood and sit on drugstore stool and stuff my bra and wait for somebody to come and discover me, and that was going to take a lot of time. And there really wasn't any necessity in doing all that when you could just curl up in a great big comfortable chair and have a hooker or two and be anything you wanted to be. Go anywhere you wanted to go and never have to get out of the chair. Nobody here at this conference in the committee or anyone I know personally said, Marilyn, we want you to clean up your story. I went down to Louisiana and they did. They did. Oh, Aronofsky. Y'all know Aronofsky? They had the audacity to have both of us on the same program. And he's raunchy as me, or raunchy as me. And we had a fellow call us in the room before the convention, and there was also a wonderful medical doctor from Colorado who had about 18 years sobriety, and Aronofsky and I are probably about 8 years old, you know. There's nothing like eight-year wonders. And this guy came in, he said, we don't have any committees down here. I have more sobriety down here than anybody else. So I chose y'all to come. And I want you to please, if you will, try to clean up your stories. And if you will, don't use any four-letter words. We in Louisiana are trying to upgrade the reputation of Alcoholics Anonymous. And after all, he said, we have ladies down here. Well, the doctor was okay. Me and old Aronofsky nearly died. And we stood around and fretted about that. And the doctor, in all of his wisdom, said, don't let that affect you. Do your thing. Be yourself. And sure enough, we did allow it to affect us. No old Dave talks fast anyway. He talks fast, you couldn't understand a word he said. 30 minutes and sat down. He really did. And I allowed it to affect me. I didn't feel like I was being me. But the good doctor saved it all. We didn't tell what had happened, but he did. On Sunday morning, he got up and introduced himself, and he told just exactly what had happened to us. And you can imagine the shock and the hush over the conference. He said, that man asked us not to use any four-letter words. And he said, I pray to God that he didn't include the word love, because that's what I intend to talk with you about this morning. And he saved us all. Well, in my young life, there were some four-letter words that I hated a lot worse than those that make your mouth fall open when your kid calls in, walks in, you know, and calls you one of them, mothers. I'm cleaning it up. There were some words, four-letter words, that absolutely made me want to puke. I couldn't stand them. I just couldn't stand to hear them. And they were like cook and iron and wash and dust made me sick. And I didn't know why. I didn't know why I couldn't be a wife like other wives and be happy about it. Well, I really did, because I should have been in Hollywood, you know. I couldn't talk to that. But I didn't want, you know, I couldn't be a mother like other mothers. I don't ever remember polishing my kids' shoes. You know, make them white and shining and white socks and all. You know, I'd rather grab a jug of wine and go to the park and stay all day and play with the kids. I'd been a good mother, as far as I was concerned. I couldn't stand that role that had been assigned me. That's why I came into this program with a mistaken idea that I'd always wanted to be a lady. And I didn't want to be a lady. What I really and truly wanted to be was a woman. And I found some ways as to how. Now, I could put on pretty good shows. I could sit on any bar stool. And a lady would walk in. And she would even have an escort. And she had on nylons and high-heeled shoes and maybe a little fur thing. And look clean and neat and have pretty hair that shine. And I was down my end of the bar on my stool in my territory in my jeans and barefooted and hadn't bothered to comb my hair in a few days. And I smelled good. Knew it. Because folks still served me. But I'd look at her and I'd think to myself, shit. You know, ha, 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 laugh up, please. Look at that broad. I've had all that. I've had all that country club, bridge club, PTA. Y'all ever get thrown out of PTA? I guess. Then they started having PTSA. I didn't even have a chance because all the kids understood me, see. Those parents and teachers didn't. I had all that. How dull, how drab, how boring, how pointless, how silly. And look at her. Man, she thinks she's hot shit. And I just tear her to pieces. Yeah, I've had nylons, I've had high heels, I've had hairdos, I've had fur coats, But I'd turn around to whoever had the nerve to sit by me. Say, I'll tell you one damn thing, Herman. I'll bet you the next drink I'm a better lay than she is. Yep. Wasn't any doubt about that. Greatest shock I've had in this program was to find out that I was just kind of mediocre. You know, there's just so many tricks. My greatest consolations were the funniest things. I'm glad that Charlie talked about bottoms tonight. And that AA is for everyone, if they choose. And you don't have to be face down puking in the gutter like me. If I'd had another dime, I'd have died drunk. Not about my mind. AA is for everyone. And today I know what a bottom is. Because Charlie's been a friend of mine for a long time. And he's a Cherokee bride. It's those people that because of finances and because of material things that can come into this program and stop drinking alcohol has my greatest admiration. Bums like me, you know, I really didn't have any choice. And old Charlie still had one. But a bottom to me is something that happens to you on the inside. Not exterior circumstances, something that happens down here in your gut where you live. And you go through every kind of treatment in the world. You see, I am so damned old that a treatment center was unheard of when this thing happened to me. State mental institutions weren't taking alcoholics. They weren't allowed. They found out you were an alcoholic, you got thrown out. So you had to con somebody into committing you as a something or other, a potential suicide. And I was. You know, I nearly killed myself trying to kill myself. There are a lot of things that I missed. I missed treatment centers, and I missed some of the new policies that I hear today that new people accept as a part of this program unless I'm there. I still bleed a lot. I hope someday to be an elder statesman like those who put this thing together here quietly and with humility and did it right, and it came out great. But right now, I guess I'm just a bleeding deacon, and I don't expect everybody to work this program the way I do. I wouldn't even dream of having you work it the way it works for me, because you are as individual a personality as your fingerprint. And this program allows for that. You can sort of do it your way, and it works for everybody. But if they told me, fake it till you make it, hell, I'd have faked myself right on out the door. I was the greatest con and manipulator. You know, nobody could beat me anyway. It was the only way I knew how to live. And I hear people say, well, I ain't hurt anybody but myself. So I guess they're going to spend the rest of their lives making amends to themselves. But I hurt everybody. I really did. And I say that without egoism. You know, if you breathed air and sat next to me, you were harmed. Otherwise, you wouldn't have been sitting next to me. If I couldn't use you, I didn't have anything to do with you. I continually sought the people I could use and con and manipulate. It was a way of life that was essential for me. I know about that master that Charlie mentioned. I'm very familiar with masters. I've had many masters. When I died, all I could die. When I'd hurt, all I could hurt. When I'd cried, all I could cry. Then I hit a bottom. And it was something that happened in here. Because I wasn't off the street. I had nothing. There was nothing left of me. Nothing. I'd abandoned my children. I left my husband. I left everyone that loved me and cared for me and gave a damn. I left them all to go pursue the master that I'd found. And when that master wasn't around, I had another one. Did y'all know that you don't have to think? You can chew a drink. I discovered that. When I couldn't get alcohol, I could usually manage to find some drugs that would substitute and would take the place of. And I used them all. I've had uppers and downers and rounders and all the things that the government says is our biggest problem. And yet, alcohol still remains the number one drug problem in our country. The most drug-oriented country in the history of our nation. And alcohol still number one drug in use today. I was in psychiatric wards like everybody else. I went to shrinks and I wasn't about to tell them what I dreamed last night. It was personal. Wasn't their fault they couldn't help me. It was mine. Incapable of being honest with myself, much less anybody else. Medical doctors could just give me some pills and say adios. They just didn't add MS. When insurance runs out, then you hit state mental institutions and you know you get in any way you can. I loved psychiatric wards. I just loved them. But when I had insurance, I was on top of the world. Because they really kept me comfortable. I got too high, they'd bring me down, you know. I'd get depressed, and they'd hoop me up. And I had a nice fellow to talk to about 20 minutes, you know, every day. Actually, not tell anything to, but just chat with. And met the nicest people. My mother always said, if you want to meet nice people, Marilyn, go to church. And I got news for her. If you want to meet nice people, go to psych ward. They really are nice folks. You know, they're the best bridge players I ever met. Right there. A friend of mine that I've had in the program for many years was in psychiatric ward, and he agreed with me. And we play bridge together once in a while now over at the club. And he told me that he cut his throat and was sent to the psych ward, you know, and was in terrible pain most of the time and all bandaged up, you know. But he said he was wanting to do something to get his mind off these problems and this pain, and got up a foursome and sat down at the table. And one little girl didn't ask, how many cards do you deal? But she did even worse than that. She said, I sure hope y'all don't play cutthroat. I can't stand pain. I never could stand pain of any kind, and if there was any way to avoid pain, I'd avoid. I didn't mind dying. See, that's easy. But I couldn't stand the pain. And I had to get away from it. But when the pain was more than I could bear, and my masters no longer served me, I wound up in a state mental institution, in fact, the only one in the country that would accept me. Clancy from High in the Sky, his old alma mater, the Big Spring, Texas State Mental Institution. And I think I'm here today probably to tell you that it doesn't make a bit of difference where the hell you are. Whether you're in a $5,000 a day treatment center in a hospital, or if you're in a treatment center paid for by the government and all of us taxpayers, it makes no difference. Or if you're in the basement of a state mental institution. If you're ready, you're ready. And if you ain't, you ain't. It's just that simple. Because I'd been in mental institutions before, and I had fun till they threw me out. I was in no physical condition to be thrown out. I know I'm not any big heavyweight right now. Never have been. But at that time I weighed 60 pounds. The medical doctor said I had the insides of an 80-year-old woman, and it was not likely that I would survive physically. And if I should, by some chance, I would never function again in society mentally. They were convinced my brain was gone. And any God that I'd ever heard about in my life, ever, had certainly better be dead as far as I was concerned. Because I had scars on my knees, and somebody finally wrote that song for me. I had scars on my knees from saying, God, help me out of this one. Not for keeps, but this one. Somehow or another, I managed to survive. And these steps that are on this wall up here to me are not steps like stairs. They all go in a circle. They ought to be in a circle. Maybe that's what that circle's for on our emblem. Hell, I don't know. But for me, they're in a circle because step one starts with step 12. I was in a withdrawal ward for 5 days and nights. And I didn't know reality from the fantasies and the hallucinations. And there were two people in that room with me, strangers, round the clock for 5 days and five nights. Now that was a requirement of the hospital, I learned later. And later, when I was about ready to leave, I said, was I hallucinating? I know I did a lot. But were there two people sitting in straight back chairs over in the corner? Every time I opened my eyes, and they'd be different people. They weren't like a buttermilk horse. They were different people with different faces and different clothes, but they were sitting there. And they said, yes, there were people in the room with you. They volunteered to sit with you in 8-hour shifts round the clock for 5 days and nights. And I said, who in the hell would do such a thing? In all my travels, I had never known anybody that would do that on a voluntary basis. And I was told that they were members of Alcoholics Anonymous and had driven from a little town about 40 miles away. They had never seen me before, nor had I ever seen them. And the loudest message that I've ever heard in this program came to me in stock silence. Their being there screamed at me, Marilyn, we don't believe you're not going to live. We don't believe you won't function in society again. We don't believe God is dead. And for the first time in all those stupid, sickening, revolting, drunken years, I saw a ray of hope. I saw a seed planted. They never asked me to believe anything they believed. Never mentioned it. Their being there was love. And I'd never seen that before. I thought I'd seen it all. But I'd never seen that before. And they said, you don't have to believe the way we do. But Marilyn, can you believe that we believe this? I said, are you kidding? You've been here. You've been the ones that volunteered. Of course I believe you believe. And they took hold of my hand and they've not turned loose of it yet. The only thing they ever asked of me was to be willing to stick out your other hand if somebody else wants what we've got. And I've gone through all kinds of stages in this program that everybody seems to go through. And they're learning experiences, and sometimes, most times, painful. I hate for pain to be the touchstone of spiritual growth. I just hate that. That's it. That's the way it is. Me, who could never stand pain, today I can honestly tell you that I am grateful for adversity. Not thrilled to death and not high as a kite, but I'm always grateful for adversity because that's the only way I learn. I still have to be backed into a corner, and this God that I understand and seems to understand me knows that. And about the time I think, what the hell else is there left for me to do? I've experienced everything there is to experience. Whammo! And I'm going to have an opportunity to learn some more. I am here to report to you that we don't ever learn it up. I've learned more in the last 5 years than I did the previous 11. Simply by remaining open-minded, like from the start. Honest with myself, like right from the start. And willing, like right from the start. I have a son that went to Vietnam, and I was sober. Everything in the world has happened to me since I've been sober. They don't remember what happened bad when I was drunk. It didn't really matter. I heard some research folks say the other day that the two most painful pains that we can experience as human beings, number one is childbirth. Number two was kidney stones. And I thought, bullshit. They don't know about us. And that we hurt harder. And we live harder. And we cry harder. And we love harder. And we do everything harder. Because we're extremists. Moderation is the key. Moderation is the key. And I don't have that pendulum swinging right yet, you know. I still have to go all the way the other way before I can ever get back to some degree of moderation. And then I thought about what they said, and the reason the pain of childbirth is not remembered by women, and you ask any mother and she'll tell you, yeah, I was going to ask that. I don't remember the pain. And that's because the pain is bringing about something productive. What can you do with a damn kidney stone? Non-productive. But childbirth, yes. So productive and so wonderful and so glorious and so magnificent and miraculous that we are willing to turn around and do it again. And again. And again. The God that I understand made sex a pleasure. It tried to tell me that was to propagate the earth. But that never occurred to me. But I do remember the childbirth. And the pain, I don't remember. I remember what came out of that. And I remember that my children were not what they were supposed to be. If I was to carry on the tradition, here came this cotton-headed thing with bluer eyes than mine. I told you Geronimo had blue eyes, didn't I? He did. Me and he got a lot in common. I had two tow heads. And they didn't look like me, didn't act like me, walk like me, or talk like me. Waited about 10 years and forgot everything, including birth control and all that. And I had my child. I had my little Chickasaw Indian. And he had beautiful black, his shiny straight hair. And it was okay because he had my blue eyes. But this was the one I would teach. This was the one that would carry on the traditions from my grandfather. And he picked it up and he loved it. We came into this program together. You see, I took him with me every place that I went. I only abandoned the towheads and the white eyes. I took my little Indian with me. It made no difference what bar stool I set him on. Or what gory, grimy, dirty, filthy company I put him in. He went with me. All the way. He was 3 years old, going on 30. And got older by the day. And wiser. And he was 9 years old, and we came in this program together, and he was so frustrated and so confused about a lot of things that the Alateen sponsors made an exception because of his great wisdom from having been around the world with me, and they allowed him into Alateen early. And it filled him up. Answered every question that he ever had. And we went to meetings together. He went to his and I went to mine, and we talked about steps. And he'd say, "Well, Mom, I'm ready to give my will over to God, but I don't know about my life." He told me how to take the steps. We helped each other. He found a God of his understanding. And he hadn't had, you know, he didn't have to go through the mess of erasing old tapes like I did. I used to break into those Nazarene churches and the Pentecostal churches and those revivals that were talked about. They didn't have to ask me to come down there and get saved. Hell, I was the first one there. Gonna get prayed through. And here this sister over here be saying, "Hang on, Marilyn, hang on." This one over here be saying, "Let go, Marilyn, let go." Shit, I don't know what to do. I just go get drunk. I had been exposed, at least. This child had not. He didn't have to unlearn a damn thing about spirituality. His mind was wide open. And he soaked it up like a sponge, just like I did. I remember telling people, "Please be careful what you say to me, because my mind is like a sponge. I'm soaking up everything you say." And I should have said, "Please walk what you talk. Because this path we're supposed to follow, I believe, is the one in the big book. I don't suggest any of you go following mine or anyone else that you know. If you stay on the one that's in the big book, then you won't fail. I'll guarantee you that you won't fail. Hell, if I followed some other people's paths that I know, and if I had done everything I was told to do, hell, I'd have been screwed to death. Without a doubt, you know, more ways than one to kill yourself. Because I had lost that death wish, you know, any way to get out of it. I would have probably married the wrong man many times. It would have not have been the way for me. But I stuck to the path in the book. Thank my God. And today I say, if it ain't the big book, don't say it to me. Don't want to hear it. And that's why I get upset about the little policies in the new group. 90 meetings in 90 days. Bullshit. If you want to stay alive, you'll go to a meeting to save your ass that day. If you want it. Nobody had to tell me to go to meetings. God, I wanted it more than anything in the world. If for no other reason, it kept me from being someplace else. And fake it till you make it. Let us love you till you can love yourself. I'll get you in the fight quicker than anything I know. They said, Marilyn, you better totally abstain from sex for about a year. And immediately I thought, why they don't tell married people that? I still haven't figured that out because sponsors are still telling their little chickens, no sex. And I believe the book says that it's dangerous for us to become emotionally involved on these, quote, campus romances. There's 6 pages in that book about sex, and they aren't judgmental. They don't say it doesn't say sound fact. But sponsors think y'all too. Except if you're married. All those little things I know are well-meaning, but they're not in the book. They're not in the book. Stick with it and you'll be a winner. Stick with the book, you'll be a winner. And you'll hear somebody someday that will be just your person to listen to. You know, I've hated sponsors, and I've loved sponsors, and I've had a lot of them, took a lot. But then the book says our sponsors, doesn't it? I don't mean that I played the game. If I didn't like what this one said, I went to another one. Not that way. All of you sponsor me. And I'm grateful for that. I've grown up, but I don't know what the hell time it is. Time to dance? I can dance, too. I'll hush pretty soon. I read something on the airplane that just tickled me to death, and I put it on the mirror in my dressing room. And it's a couple of lines of a song. Nothing could be finer than the crisis to be minor in the morning. And I thought that was wonderful. Some people would have you believe that when you get sober and get these 12 steps under your belt, everything's going to just be marvelous. And everything turns to shit. I mean, you haven't lived until you get fired sober. You always had booze to blame it on before. Get fired sober. That's a crusher. You know, when you're still walking around saying, well, if I hadn't drunk that stuff, I wouldn't do that. That's bullshit. Everything I ever did under the influence of alcohol, I did because I would love to have done it sober and didn't have the guts. That's the truth. Like other masters we know about, that's where I got my strength and my courage to pick a fight with the biggest, broadest blonde in the bar. Knew I was going to get creamed, but our drinks were going to be on. Insanity has nothing to do with that stuff. Nothing. the insanity of my powerlessness and my compulsion was what I had to have help with. And so far I have. I'd like to report that it's only been about 3 years since I honestly and truly experienced mental defenselessness. Now, I thought I had a lot of times. You see, my straight date and my dry date, I know it's true because my sister in Alcoholics Anonymous then told me, Marilyn, this won't mean anything to you today as the bars were going down. And she stood there with tears in her eyes. But today is the first day you've not had a drink or any drugs. And it's June the 6th, 1966, which makes my dry date 6-6-66. Mm-hmm. Kept me sober a lot of times, too. Think how long I'd have to drink to have nothing like that. If I live. And a lot of people do think about me on my birthday. You know, they start to date their checks or whatever, and they see 6-6, and I get a phone call. It's wonderful. It's really wonderful. And easy for me to remember. It would have to be. Mentally defenseless. I read it and I read it and I talked about it. And at one time I was so determined that I was going to walk when I talked. You know, when we go through the spiritual years, when, you know, I was so spiritual, as the fellow said, I was of no earthly use. None. But I was, and I went to save everybody Billy Graham missed. And I was eating on Oral's leg, too. You know, I was going to save them all. And we all go through that, but I was so spiritual, I was going to transcend any minute. Determined to walk what I talked. And I walked around, I looked like I was constipated, I think. And I should have known better. I never did martyr well. Never did. And I knew by now, you know, having worked through some of the steps, worked on some of them, that my defects of character had all been removed. And what I didn't understand, that the characteristics that are listed in the 12 and 12 for us to use as a guideline, and they call them seven cardinal sins. Hell, I know what sin was. Still don't. Women still learn. But that, for me, was a guide. And I used it for a guide. Those are all human characteristics to me. Can you imagine a human being walking around totally free of lust and jealousy and envy and all those seven things listed? And this, being a heavy, you know, lightweight, I would have transcended a long time ago. But I thought that's what I was asking to be removed from me. Those things that had caused me such pain. You know, I wasn't just jealous, I'd kill your ass. Tell whoever it was up there you died or something. Nothing in moderation. All of those things, all of those characteristics in me had great big gaping holes where they've been misused. And today I've seen me jealous and could actually turn it around and make something productive of it. What I asked my higher power to remove were those things that stood in the way of my usefulness to him and to other people. I didn't say, you know, I don't want to be jealous anymore, don't want to be envious anymore, don't want to be lustful, don't want to be any of those things anymore, take it all away. and I would be sitting at his right-hand side. I had to learn to live as a human being on this planet. That's what this program has done for me. But it took a very rude awakening, because I was wonderful at least halfway there and saving everyone. If you want to know anything spiritual, just go ask Marilyn. And I was in a little group meeting one night, and we all stood up to say the Lord's Prayer, like we have here every meeting. We held hands, and I said, "Our Father, that is the best-looking new guy that just walked in that door I have ever seen in my life, and I know he's young, but he's a good-looking man. I wonder if he needs a sponsor. Maybe he might, God, he might need a mother. You know, you can't ever, I bet he's good lay." And I went, and then it dawned on me, I couldn't even finish the prayer. Saint Marilyn has fallen. I'd always been called a fallen woman, and then I knew what one was. Start over. Repetition strengthens and confirms. You're allowed to do everything wrong as many times as you want to, as long as you continue to repeat, it will confirm, and finally you get it right, hopefully. I've taken too much time, and I don't care.
No problem.
I don't know when I have felt such overwhelming love as I'm feeling right this minute from you. It's the most wonderful thing in this world. I wish I could feel it all of the time. I have a son that went to Vietnam, and I prayed that he would not get hurt and that he'd come back alive. And my sponsor said, "You dumb shit, that's not how you pray." I learned how to pray in this program. She said, "When you pray like that, you know some other mother's kid's going to get it? You want him to get it instead of yours? What kind of praying is that?" I said, "What do I do? Now I'm worried sick. I want him to come home." We had been reunited as a family, my dad. She said, "You do what the 11th step says, and you pray that God will give him the strength and the courage to cope with whatever comes his way. And you can also ask that for yourself," and that's all. And that worked, because he just came home doped. He learned how to cope like I did. I'm really happy to report to you that he is a beautiful young man today, and he has 6 years sobriety in our program. Hold it. I got a daughter out there still doing it. And I love her more than the day she was born. You find it one of these days. And my Alateen, my little Indian, that told me about God and how he felt about him, the one that was going to carry on, really is. He is carrying on. He is so much more spiritual with his thinking today than I'd ever hoped to be. He is closer to his higher power than I ever hoped to be. I have more strength and more courage and more hope for everybody, including myself, today because of him. That I wanted to sort of explain to Precious Sally. Incidentally, honey, my daughter's name Sally. To her, since she couldn't do it for me, why I came to this conference in costume. I think you've noticed that every day I've had some kind of Indian attire on that is authentic. My Alateen got into the beads, and he got into all of the crafts. And I didn't have time. You know, I didn't have time to. So I was going to lay it all on him. And it didn't turn out to be that way. So today I'm doing it for him. And every time you see me, I'll probably have some little indication of that heritage for him. Because he died 2 years ago. And tonight, my being here is for him. He's here too, you know. He's probably saying, Mom, when are you going to shut up? Every time he crosses my mind, he's saying to me, I'm where we wanted to get to. I'm with you. And this makes this night so special. I've not given a talk anywhere. I've not shared anything with anyone from a podium for 2 years. This one I chose to accept because of my newfound strength and my newfound courage that I got from Nell today. I got from everyone here today. Sometimes I feel sad, but depressed. Sometimes I feel a longing and a missing, but don't you all? Don't we all have bad days sometimes? We luxuriate. We allow ourselves, I do, once in a while, to have a bad day. I learned to set the alarm clock, though. You know, I allow myself to suffer about 30 minutes. And then, and boy, I suffer. But when the alarm goes off, that's that. That's the biggest waste of my time. And my time is my most precious asset. I don't have time for that. Don't want to hear anybody say, well, I'm in a bad mood today. Bullshit. I have reason to be here. And yes, I may say, you know, you feel sad sometimes, I understand. I understand when I do. You have bad days. There are times when I feel useless and hopeless and worthless. And I know you do too, because we are human beings. And we're going to be that until the day we physically leave this planet. Learning how to live as a human being is an exciting experience, and I highly recommend it. If you've had a bad day, if you're new in this program, if you're wishing the hell I'd shut up so you could go dance too close with your partner, I don't. If you feel down and a little bit depressed and a little bit sad, please remember one thing for me. Your being here and inviting me to be here has made my day. You may feel helpless about your own moods and your own feelings, but today, without even knowing it, you've given me everything I needed. I feel whole and I feel good. And God knows I thank you.